This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Well, here we are again. All back together. The team is back together. I'm back. Steve, I heard you had a hell of a weekend.
Oh, God. I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, it was remarkable, I guess you can say.
Remarkable. That's a good word.
A lot of remarks to be said about it.
Yeah, I saw. Well, no, I've read those, actually. I've been reading those all weekend. The interesting thing is that the person that's leaving the most, I don't want to say hateful, but the most the most critical person was the guest from on Friday. They've left quite a few.
I've read
quite a few messages.
None directed to me though. So by the way, they were okay with me, but they have some other issues, and I'm like, okay, I'm just avoiding this. You guys work it out, man.
And by the way, everyone was so, I got so many messages last time, was like, Kyle, when you coming back, we miss you. So I tried to kind of circumvent that this time by putting someone who looked a lot like me. And I think it actually did the trick, because very few people noticed I was gone this time. I was happy and also really sad at the same time that was the case.
Well, I mean, he cut his hair just like you, like really spent 4 minutes cutting his hair just to have it just like yours.
Did you see it? All planned. Yeah. I hate that I heard about what happened on Saturday. That was very annoying, the Poe situation.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed too, but I did go into it. I asked him before we went on air. I said, I want to make sure you're not a Poe. I mean, do you actually believe this stuff? And I didn't get a vote of confidence very much from him, right? He was just very hesitant and didn't really want to tell me much about his positions. And so going into it, I was already not in a mindset that this guy was legit. But towards the end, people in live chat, I was telling them, I think this guy's a Poe. And people were like, yeah, he's a Poe. And then people were like, no, he's legit. I'm like, no, I think he's actually a Poe. And then he's like, I'm a Poe.
So, random nobody in the chat says that Jim made a better Kyle than Kyle. Random nobody, I'm going to set you in timeout just a second for you to think about what you're saying. Just take 5 minutes.
Your transgression.
And really yeah. Think about yeah. Really think about if Jim made a better Kyle than me. But no, it's good to be back. It's good to be back. I missed you all. Let's say hello to Paul and SJ real quick, and then I'll let you guys know what we've got coming up for the week. So, hello, Paul. Welcome back. I believe this is your
thank you so much.
Over 10 appearances here. So, I know that's true.
Over 10. Well,
over 10.
Good goal.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think it's might be 18. Back.
Yeah. At least, I think. Because, and you, like, even on the show, you won the you were the creator of the year.
Crater of the Year by your your audience clearly has terrible taste.
Oh, I think they have fine taste. Don't listen to him, chat. You have great taste. Don't listen to him. But anyway, it's good to have you back. I'm excited to hear tonight's discussion. And then we'll say hello to SJ. SJ, you've been on here probably 10 times at least as well.
Yeah, thank you. I've had a good time, so I keep coming back.
Good. Well, hopefully this will be another another good time for you. Following tonight's show, just to let you guys know, Shannon Q will be holding a after show where she'll discuss what transpired here. I'm sure you guys both are invited to that as well. But you in the chat, please go over there as soon as we get finished here and check her out. That will be, again, on Shannon Q's channel. And Shannon, if you want, as we go along, just put the link to the video in the live chat so people can kind of just click over as we go on from there. Kevin Mears, who is a demonologist, will be with us tomorrow. That's Tuesday the 8th at 8 p.m. On Wednesday the 9th, two incels will be coming back to try to, I don't want to say damage control, but no, I do want to say damage control. They will be coming over to smooth over some of the things that happened over the course of the last 2 weeks. So check that out on Wednesday. Right now we're in we're trying to figure out what's going on with the modern day debate and Mike Winger and Ocean situation. That's either going to be Wednesday at 10, modern day debate. I see that you're in the chat. So I just sent you a message too on Twitter. By the end of the show, I'll have a better time for you guys and everybody can kind of, we can go from there, but that will be worked out here before we finish up. And then an interesting thing, Dave, do you want to put that graphic up that I sent you earlier? Flat Earthers all the time talk about CGI and things from NASA being computer-generated images. Well, I've got an actual computer, a CGI expert that deals in film. And Dave, are you there? There we go. Okay. So this guy's name is Matthew Walker. And over to your right, you'll see some of the films that he has done the CGI work on. The Fate of the Furious, The Great Wall that recently came out, Fury with Brad Pitt. He's got an impressive resume. You can see it all on IMDb. Just search Matthew Robert Walker there for visual effects. He will be with us on Friday, and we will be going through what actual CGI is and pointing out how NASA is not doing that. So that kind of shoots their argument in the foot, unless you think that that episode will in itself be CGI, and then we can't do anything for you. And then finally, on the 16th, Trevor Valley will be here against Dan B. Bedondi, who used to work at InfoWars. They're going to be having a discussion on that Wednesday. That's the 16th. So Trevor Valley, a fan favorite, will be back with us that day. So make sure that you're here to check that out. Okay, Steve, anything you need to add before we jump in?
Just on Wednesday, I believe that you're going to be doing that episode with Katie, correct? Paulson for the
Yes, yes, yes.
I have a prior engagement. I'm going to be on The Place. Won't be at the exact same time, I don't think, but I will be joining Dr. Jones on NGC Studios with Stephen Hoyt. We're going to be talking about theological positions, and it's going to be different because I've been hesitant to go on that show. I love Dr. Jones so much, and he scares the hell out of me. Because he's probably the smartest person I've ever ran across on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways.
I like him.
He knows his shit.
I've always liked him. And I'm going to try to get Shannon, if Shannon is free that Wednesday, since we got everything moved around, I'm going to try to see if Shannon wants to come back for some more incel-ness. But I'm not sure if she – I think she might
have
her
done
feel,
enough
but,
to her. Yeah, I mean, the poor girl.
I'm going to ask her anyway. Oh, I'm going to ask her anyway. Okay, so let's
– She needs a reason to drink, so yeah, I guess so.
Let's jump into the discussion tonight. Which one of you kind of want to talk about how this kind of transpired or how we got to where we are here today? And then we'll actually put up the graphic and we can go through. I'll read off the different points that we're going to be talking about tonight. So whichever one of you want to jump in and
well, did you still have an opening here. That you wanted to do, SJ?
I can speak to that.
Sure. Sure.
So, okay. So I posted a meme. I created this meme and I posted it on Twitter, and it basically was eight what I called facts about Christianity. And so I put 8 things that I considered facts, or basically well-attested claims, or claims that many people supported with respect to Jesus's crucifixion and resurrection. And so as I put it up there, it wasn't within minutes. I feel like it was within minutes. All of a sudden there was a response from Paul, and he said, "We must debate this. This is not true. These are not true facts." And so I said, "Game on, you know, why not?" So he contacted Kyle. We waited a couple of weeks, and then Kyle wrote back at some point. I think it was over Christmas. It was a busy time, and wrote back and said that he's ready to do this. So we scheduled the date.
Yeah, I'm horrible. Sometimes I'm horrible about getting back to I'll read it and I'll be like, okay, I need to go check the schedule and see when we can fit it in. And then I'm so scatterbrained sometimes I forget, and it does take me a while to get back to. Sorry about that, but we're here, so that's all that matters.
Perfect.
Let's throw up the actual graphic though, Dave, and I'll read off just what the eight facts. We're here, and then we'll let you guys do your openings, but let me pull it up here. Okay, so what we've got is Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate, see secular historian Josephus. Number 2 was women first discovered his empty tomb, and no one claimed Jesus was buried anyplace else until about 1,700 years later. His dead body was never produced. Number 3, all 4 Gospels attest to the fact that Jesus is risen. Number 4, Paul, who once hunted and persecuted Christians. Paul, I didn't know that you did that. That's not nice.
Yeah. While I was in the pew. Nasty.
Indicated he saw the risen Christ in 1 Corinthians 15, along with the 500, including the 12 apostles. Number 5, early Christians, including Paul, Peter, Stephen, and James, were often beaten, jailed, stoned, hung on crosses, and beheaded. They preached for decades, stating that they saw the risen Christ. Examples can be found in Acts, the epistles, and external writings by Polycarp, Pliny the Younger, and Tacitus. Number 6, Christianity was not legalized until 313, when Constantine legalized it. Number 7, Christianity started as a religion of peace, growing through the peaceful efforts of the apostles and disciples. And finally, number 8, by 313, Christianity had between 5 and 6 million adherents. See Geoffrey Warrow, 2008, Historical Atlas. So those are the 8 facts that SJ puts forth, and Paul has takes issue with a couple of those, and we're here to discuss what those are tonight. So which of the two of you would like to lay out your opening statements first?
Either way, SJ? Sure.
Paul, did you want to go first?
Sure, I can. It'll be short. You know, as we already talked about, the interesting thing I've noticed, some of my followers who know anything about me, follow me at all, know that I hate memes in general. I'm anti-meme. If you've ever seen me on Genetically Modified Skeptic, he actually has me on just to torture me with memes. So they're not my favorite. So it's kind of ironic that I would come on and to debate a meme. But and also, SJ, I don't even follow SJ on Twitter. Her Twitter feed is so pervasive and gets forwarded around, and it's always just in our face. So this particular meme I'd seen, I don't think you posted this in December 1st. I think I've seen it earlier than that, or at least earlier revisions of it. Anyway, so SJ posted this meme. The first time I saw it forwarded or whatever it was facts about Christianity. And of course, she dares non-believers to try to reconcile what she believes are facts with a possible conclusion. Now, of course, one of the reasons why non-believers don't take her up on this is because generally non-believers don't accept that these are facts in any way. And I actually asked SJ before we started, I wasn't willing to do this unless we agreed to a definition of facts. Or actually, I just agreed to agree to whatever definition she came up with, things known or proven to be true, which is possibly problematic, but we're going to go with that tonight. Now, if possible, if there's time at the end, I would love to give SJ, or maybe in the after show, what my explanation would be for these facts, if indeed there are any facts in here. But that's not what we're here for tonight. Really, we're here to just look at all 8 and go through and see if, in fact, there are any facts here. Some of them are straightforward assertions. Some of them are probable. Some of them have only a kernel of truth, so they're partially true, partially not. And others, I would say, are really nothing more than very carefully crafted statements that are true, but the way they are worded, the way they are phrased, tends to think that they will have implications far beyond what the actual fact supports, and we'll talk about those. So it's going to sound like I'm really pedantic tonight, because I'm going to be getting into the very careful individual words, and I know that that's going to seem like I may be missing the broad point, but the fact is that SJ puts these forth as things that need to be explained, and when they need to be explained, you need to look at every individual word. Facts in general, when you look at historical facts, we look at Washington. He was a president of the United States, but that's a historical fact. Did he cut down a cherry tree? Maybe, maybe not. That's not really considered a historical fact. It's different historians would give different probabilities for that. Did the Twin Towers fall on 9/11? Yeah, the Twin Towers fell. How did that happen? Why did that happen? Those are not historical facts. Those are things that are interpreted. Those are things guessed. Did Muhammad ride on a flying horse? That's not a historical fact. Did Joseph Smith translate golden plates? Not a historical fact. SJ's aware probably of everything. Nothing I say tonight will be a surprise to her. So why are we even having this discussion? Well, I'm a little bit bothered that SJ puts forth this thing, because I feel like she is doing her God a disservice. She is extending beyond what the facts say to defend her God, when really, if her God is happy with the level of evidence that exists in the world, SJ should be happy with the level of evidence that fits in the world. She shouldn't need to lie on behalf of her God, to misrepresent on behalf of her God, to exaggerate on behalf of her God. Now, it's my understanding that SJ's made a number of New Year's resolutions, including one to be less hyperbolic on Twitter. So I'm hoping that tonight will mark the start of it. I know that in January, she has reposted this tweet. So if this is one of her hyperbolic tweets, she's continued to do it in the new year. But I'm hoping, SJ, that if I've made any points tonight, if I convince you that anything that you are doing is not a fact, that this meme will be edited. This meme will, and I'm happy to do it for you if you want. I can change the meme. But my goal tonight, my only reason to be here, is that this is the last time I ever see this meme on Twitter, at least not without some corrections. So that's why I'm here tonight, to help you edit your meme and fix it.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
And now we will. Yeah.
Should I?
That was one of the best openers I think I've ever heard. That was really good.
So this is all about me editing my meme. Okay. So I will give you that up front. If you convince me that there are points in this meme or there are words, because it sounds like you're going to go through this word by word. So if you convince me that I need to wordsmith a few things or to make some changes, I'll be open to that. And even if you convince me that I need to get rid of one of the points on the meme, because I have 8 points. And if you make a convincing case that I need to delete one of those points, I'll go ahead and do that. So up front, I'm going to go ahead and guarantee you that I will modify my meme if necessary after this conversation. Is that fair?
Perfect. That's okay. All I want.
Okay. So you also mentioned the New Year's resolution. Yes, I will just clarify that just for the audience, just so they know. You will not be seeing any more memes. I mean, any more... what do we call that? I'll call it clickbait. You're not going to see any more clickbait from me on Twitter. I for some reason found this really amusing in the last 4 years or 3 years, that every once in a while I put a tweet out there that I knew I was going to attract attention, and it did attract a lot of attention. And a lot of times it was negative attention, and I don't want to attract negative attention anymore. In fact, I don't even think I want to attract attention anymore. So I've decided that I'm not putting out any more clickbait. And I don't consider this particular meme clickbait, though. My clickbait was things like, you know what it was. I won't even mention it. I don't want to, because I don't want to attract attention, and I don't want this recorded and someone taking this video and running off with it. So, but anyway, so that's not going to happen. I've already made a New Year's resolution on that, and I've been keeping it now. We're already day 7, so we're doing pretty well. But as far as the 8 points that I brought up there, they're expansions on 4 key points that I think a lot of different apologists have come to agree with. And I listened to your video not too long ago. In fact, I've listened to it now 3 times with Mike Winger. And I know that you just said that you might bring him in. and I listened to what you guys came to agreement on. And so you came to an agreement on 3 points, at least I think you did, with Mike Winger. And one of the points was related to the first point here, which is Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate. You and Mike, I think, agreed that, yes, Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate. Another point that a lot of apologists talk about is he was given a proper burial under Joseph of Arimathea. That was something that was said by William Lane Craig. There's a lot of Sean McDowell. A lot of people bring that up. They also said that the empty tomb, and this is also mentioned as one of these, was discovered by females. That's something that was attested in the four Gospels. And so that's also another point that's related to this. A third one that is a big point that's really important that's related to what you see here in number four and number five, but that's the idea that various individuals stated that they saw the risen Jesus and that he appeared to them both individually and in groups. So that's another pretty important point. And another thing, another key point that I think is also in here is that the original disciples suddenly and sincerely came to believe that God raised Jesus from the dead, despite all inclinations not to believe. So I think when you take those key points out of these larger group of 8 points, I think when you put that all together and you try to determine a best explanation for that, and something that answers all of those points without saying, okay, this one's wrong, that one's wrong. The best explanation is that Jesus was crucified, he died, and on the third day he was risen from the dead. His apostles saw him over 40 days. They ate with him at some points. He appeared to people at different points. He appeared to groups. And so the best explanation that I'd like to bring in tonight is that Jesus died, resurrected, and he is Lord. And so that concludes my opening.
All right.
Perfect. Okay. Paul, I'm going to let you turn it over to you. And
all right.
I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can just take it where you want to go.
All right. Well, I'd like to start with number one. This should be short, but we'll start with number one. Just for the audience's sake, Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate. See secular historian Josephus. As you know, if you've watched some of my debates on the resurrection, you know that this is a point I generally concede. I don't know for sure that we can say that Jesus was a historical figure, but I'm generally willing to grant that for the sake of discussion. And if he, you know, if he was a historical person, then the fact that he died would be not a very special claim. Although I think you're, by putting Pontius Pilate in here, you're pointing to something specific. But I wanted to ask you about this one. Since I've conceded it, I just wanted to ask you if you could tell the audience a little bit who Josephus was.
Okay, yeah. So Josephus, he wrote Antiquities. He was living from 37 AD to 100 AD. And basically he wrote Antiquities, which was a pretty large volume that was he's an historian. And he recorded a lot of different things through a lot of different volumes, and he's been pretty well attested. Interestingly, though, his writings is, from what I understand, I think that his writings weren't discovered until 800, basically. So this isn't something that we have evidence going all of the way back until, say, the year 50 or 60 or 70 or whenever he actually wrote this stuff. So we don't have all of that going back to those years, but we do have, I think, about around 800 where Josephus's information came out. So, and he said, Josephus said, "At this time, there was a wise man who was called Jesus. His conduct was good, and he was known to be virtuous. And many people from among the Jews and other nations became his disciples. Pilate condemned him to be crucified and to die." And then he said some more things. But he was not a Christian, which is pretty key. There is a part in Josephus that's contested that some Christian probably added to, and I'll concede that. But that's not part of it. This statement that I just read to you is not really
the contested part. Right, and I'm not going to dispute you on that. I think that there are probably some real words in there, like you said. So I guess you would consider Josephus to be based on this one, he's a reliable source for that point of history, as far as you're concerned.
Yes, I would say so. I think that's fair.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that's all I have to say about number one. If it's okay with you, though, Ashley, I'd like to jump to number three first, if you don't mind going a little bit out of order.
Sure. I'm going to go to number three. All four
number
Gospels
three,
attest the fact Jesus is risen. Okay.
Yeah. You use the word fact in there. Now, you say that the Gospels attest to the fact that Jesus was written, but yet you're trying to use When you quoted this on January 9th, you said that that this set of facts point to a best explanation that Jesus is risen. So I'm not sure how an explanation can be in there as fact. So is Jesus is risen, is that a fact, or is that an assertion of the Gospels?
That's actually a good point. So I say all four Gospels attest to the fact that Jesus is risen. Perhaps I could wordsmith that. I'll concede that to you. Maybe I should just say all four Gospels attest that Jesus is risen. Would that be fair?
Awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll get rid of the "to the fact." I will modify my meme.
So awesome.
Look at that.
So you also said that, the four Gospels, attest to the resurrection. But you don't say that all four Gospels have a risen Jesus. Why is that?
Well, actually, they do. I know that the contested Gospel that I think you're bringing up is Mark. Am I correct?
Well, I'm just wondering why you worded it this way.
Because I've seen a lot of
Mark is
atheists.
Yeah, Mark is.
No, I've seen a lot of atheists actually talk about that. You know, there's four Gospels, and basically Mark ended his Gospel a little bit early. He ended it with the Mark 16:6-8, which is and then after that, what was written after that they figure was added later. But Mark 16:6-8, we have a comment from an angel. Says, "Don't be alarmed," he said, "you are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him." So, and then there's some more words, but basically what happened in that portion is we see that the angels told the women that, yes, Jesus is risen. The women ran off scared, and that's where Mark left off. And so I just put that in there because I think some people don't realize that little passage is in there when they say that Mark didn't mention the resurrection, because actually it does mention the resurrection.
But it doesn't have a risen Jesus. So I guess I'm pleased with your... Actually, this is like another case where I believe you very carefully worded this. And so great. So we're going to take out the word fact on number three, which is great. And we're going to say that all four Gospels attested to it. So cool. So let's go to the first little bit on number two, which is women first discovered his empty tomb. So is that a historical fact? And on what basis would you call that a historical fact?
I think that there are, let me just see besides, well, if it depends on if you are allowing the Gospels to be considered historically reliable, and I do consider them to be historically reliable. I consider the fact that there are independent attestations to the four, from the four authors that basically said women discovered the empty tomb. And so based on that, I would say because we have four independent authors attesting to the fact that women were the first to discover the empty tomb, that the empty tomb was discovered by women. One of the things that I think that you know, is the criteria of embarrassment was met by the fact that women did discover the empty tomb, because during that period of time, women were considered second-class citizens. And they didn't have many rights. And it's kind of like how many, many hundreds of years later, women still, you know, even recently here in the United States, semi-recently, we got a right to vote not too long ago, really, when you look back at the whole scheme of things. So women had not been treated terribly well, but Jesus gave women the esteemed position of discovering the empty tomb, which I think is pretty neat.
I wasn't planning to talk about that, but what, you know, if we listen to Josephus and other historians at the time, who is it not fair to say that women were always the first to every tomb, that women were the ones who did all the treatments of the bodies based on those customs?
I don't know if that's fair to say. I haven't seen anything written on that. Have you seen something written on that said women are always the first to the tombs?
According to Josephus, that's the custom, is that women tend to the bodies. So it would be rather... not just embarrassment, it would have been rather historically odd if men had gone there first. But that's not something I was actually planning to talk about tonight, so I didn't dig deep into that. But it's my understanding from Josephus that women were first. I guess my question, you just told me that the four Gospels are tell you the fact that the women went to the tomb, but you just told me that the four Gospels weren't good enough to be the fact of the resurrection. So you have the same evidence. So if I'm just going to accept the fact of women, why wouldn't I just accept the resurrection as fact? And why are you sucking this little piece out as a fact? Wouldn't it go better with, shouldn't you put it with the other one? The Gospels attest that women went to the tomb, and the Gospels attest that Jesus was risen, as opposed to being a historical fact, something level of 9/11 or whatever.
Okay, so maybe I could collapse the two items. So I could take the two items, put them together, and say, and the empty tomb was discovered by women, maybe an item.
And
one.
If you want to just say that, the four Gospels attest all kinds of things. They attest to Josephus, they attest to a torn curtain, and they attest to, you know, all kinds of things. If you believe the stories, if you believe the Gospels, there's a whole, I think you'd agree, there's a whole litany of things you're going to believe.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah. The key thing that is part of the whole Gospels is Jesus' resurrection.
Right. But so this four women, like, you don't have other historical things to base that on as a separate fact?
No, I actually don't. I looked into that. I don't have anything else, or at least I couldn't find anything else to base on that said the four women discovered. But now you actually have given me something with Josephus, so I'm going to take that and run with it.
All right. Sounds good. You know who Gary Habermas is, correct?
Yes.
Who's Gary Habermas?
He's a New Testament scholar.
And fair to say, he's probably the most prolific writer about the resurrection, and actually, and probably one of the authors of the basic facts argument, right?
Yeah, he is. And actually, I listened to your conversation with Mike Winger, and he noted you did talk about the percentages of Gary Habermas actually went and took a survey of a number of different scholars and was able to come to consensus on certain points concerning Jesus' resurrection.
I was just wondering if you were aware that in the last year, Gary has actually dropped the empty tomb from his basic facts. He's down to four. I actually rewatched the video today just to make sure I was correct on that. So I would encourage you to watch Gary's new stuff. Gary has actually dropped this as a basic fact that he presents when he speaks.
Okay, but I think he still says 75% of scholars do agree to the empty tomb, correct? Did he change 75%?
No, he dropped empty tomb altogether. I'm happy to share a video link to you later.
But he dropped the survey results that said 75% agreed to the empty tomb, or...?
All I know is that he dropped it when he presents, so he no longer uses it as one of his basic facts when he presents. He doesn't feel like it's well attested enough that he can include it any longer.
Okay.
So, yeah. So the second part of number two, no one claimed that Jesus was buried any place other than 1700 years later. No one claimed. That's your assertion, is that no one claimed that Jesus was buried any place else. So I guess I'm wondering if you've heard of Porphyry of Tyre.
What did he claim?
Porphyry of Tyre wrote a book called Against the Christians in the 2nd century, and Constantine banned it in the 1300s, in the 300s. Now, the only way we know about this book, allegedly it was a long book, but the only way we know of it is references in the pro-Christian writing that did survive. And several people like Eusebius and others quote Porphyry and some of his objections in this long volume, but it was no longer copied. We have no extant copies, as there's lots of things like that. So I guess I'm wondering if Porphyry wrote a long book in 250 or so CE, how would we know that he didn't claim that Jesus was buried somewhere else?
So let me ask you this. So you're saying around 200, because first you said the 2nd century, but now you're actually indicating the 3rd century.
Sorry.
So he wrote this around 250.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yep. Okay, so around 250 CE. So do you think it's a stronger case can be made when you actually have eyewitnesses who are testifying and information that was written in the same century as the person who resurrected, or do you think it's more a better case to go after people and their testimonies or what they wrote a couple hundred years later? Which one do you think is more likely to be true?
Well, you know my position on eyewitnesses. I don't think, and we'll get to that, but I don't think we have any witnesses. I don't think the Gospels were written by eyewitnesses, any of that kind of stuff. To answer your question, obviously it's better. But what I'm looking at is your thing that says no one claimed Jesus was buried any place until 1700 years later. And that is a very bold claim to make an assertion that no one said this. So if you were going to say no, Porphyry one said did say this, this. No, I'm saying he could have. I have this follow up question. There's several authors like this, but there suppose there was a gravedigger who buried Jesus somewhere, and he totally knew about this. And under what scenario would we know that he didn't wander around saying, "Nah, I buried that guy"? Like, you're making a very bold claim when you say no one said that Jesus was buried anywhere else. So I guess I'm wondering how you can have such confidence that neither Porphyry nor any of the other people who Michael Martin has written about how Constantine got rid of dissenting voices, got rid of dissenting books. You know, in the third century, a lot of the stuff that was dissenting to Christianity was destroyed from libraries and never copied again, according to Christian researchers, not secular researchers. I guess I'm just wondering how you can be so confident that no one made this claim before.
How about if I'll concede, how about if I change the wording to, we have no evidence that anyone claimed, because you said you're using speculation to say perhaps Porphyry said this, or perhaps someone else said that, or perhaps there was a man who was walking over the grave and he said that, but we don't have any evidence that indicates that is the case. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure. That's fair, I guess. But, you know, okay. Yeah, absolutely. That's ultimately how I would edit, is that the first recorded, you know, thing was 1700 years later. That's fine with me as well. The next part is his dead body was never produced, which of course I'm not going to debate that. I'm not saying that anyone ever, you know, actually did bring Jesus's body out and parade it around town or anything like that. But I guess I want to go back to point one and remind you that you felt that Josephus was a reliable source for things that happened in this time period. And talk a little bit about Josephus and what he talked about. So Josephus tells us that the usual case for Roman burial of their enemies when they're crucified was to put them in a mass grave outside of the city. And one of the references for that is in his book Wars in chapter 3.8.5. Do you think that Josephus is correct when he says that the usual case was that Romans buried their buried the crucifixion victims in mass graves?
I think that Josephus could have absolutely said that. Sure.
Okay. So, and he also laid out special cases for any exceptions for this. They were always the next day, and they were always for family members only. So he did lay out one exception case that I know a lot of Christians point to and say, hey, if they get asked, the family gets to have the body the next day. Now, the gospel story conflicts with both of those things. And so I guess I'm wondering why you would think that anything other than the most normal case should be surprising to anyone. The very most normal thing would be that he was thrown in a mass grave and no one would have known or taken note of where he was. That's the normal case. So I guess I'm wondering why we should be able to expect that even if they wanted to, that they could produce a body.
Well, because we don't have any claims from anyone saying that Jesus in particular was thrown into a mass grave. So no one made that claim. And actually, you brought up a really good point with the family members, because one of the other criterion of embarrassments is the fact that Jesus was not collected from the cross from one of his own family members. And the apostles actually had all ran off and hidden. It was actually pretty embarrassing that a Pharisee who was among the Sanhedrin who convicted him, Joseph of Arimathea, actually was the one who went and asked Pontius Pilate for permission to take Jesus from the cross. So how embarrassing is that to the apostles and to his mother and to everyone else that the family was not involved in removing him from the cross and from putting into the tomb? Instead, you have a member of the enemy camp essentially taking him down, doing it for whatever reason. But one reason was because it stated quite clearly that you did not want to, according to some of the earlier books in the Old Testament, you don't leave a body hanging up on the cross during the Passover. So they had to remove the body before the Passover and they put him into the empty tomb. So this is another example of the criterion of embarrassment being met.
But you're talking again about the gospel claims, which I think if you wanted to talk about Joseph of Arimathea or whatever else, you'd have to put that under only the gospel says. I think what we do know from secular history is that the usual case, mass grave, the usual case, only the family gets it. So the gospels are the ones that are making this extraordinary claim that the two normal things that that happen, the only things in recorded history outside of the gospels, are wrong. It's contradicting both the normal case and the one special exception. So I guess, again, why? I'm not gonna ask you to change his dead body was never produced, because of course it was. But you, by that, you are implying that they should have been able to, when we know that the normal thing that normally happened would never be able to produce a dead body, even if the Romans decided a couple weeks later they should be able to. So anyway, since I'm not asking you to add that, unless you had another comment.
Yeah, well, let me piggyback. Let me piggyback on that, because there is something in Matthew 28. Basically, it says that the Jewish people basically said when the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. So what we have from the Gospels, whether or not you believe it, is the Jewish people basically devising a plan to explain away the empty tomb and the fact that his body wasn't discovered there. So the indication is that the people in those times, whether it were the Jews or it were the Romans or it were anybody else who was considered an enemy of Jesus, none of them made the claim that he was put into a mass grave. In fact, they all actually made up a story to explain the fact that his body was taken away. So there's no claims that are out there from the Jews, the Romans, or the pagans, or anyone else saying, "Oh, Jesus was put into a mass grave. We don't know which one's his body." No one said that. All we know is the one story we do have is that the Jews basically were paying off somebody to pretend like the apostle stole the money and stole the body.
How do you suppose the author of Matthew got that story, if it's correct? Because if the people who got paid the money, you just read it, that they did exactly what was asked and they didn't tell anyone. How do you suppose that got into the gospel?
I would just suppose the fact that Matthew is a tax collector and also is a Jew. There's gossip. There's all kinds of ways he could have found out that information. So they said they're not going to tell anybody, but certainly there could have been currents of information that went out. Also, actually, if you look at the history with Jewish people, even if you ask Jewish people today about Jesus, all the Jews I know, at least, I know many Jews because I lived in Boca Raton for many years and about half the city is Jewish. Every Jew I've ever met does know that Jesus was someone who was crucified, and they know that Caiaphas and the other people in the Sanhedrin took care of that. So one thing you might want to remember is Jesus was also from a group of considered Pharisees. So Jesus, as a Jew, was in all of the Jewish people who followed him were also among that entire group. So they kind of broke away.
So I guess all I would say to the audience is that, again, the two normal things that we know happen are claimed to be not what has happened. And so I would, you know, it comes down to, if you believe the gospels, okay. But if you don't, I guess I don't quite see why it's a separate point. But let's go on to 4, because I think you're probably salivating thinking of 1 Corinthians 15. So we'll jump there. First part of 4a, Paul, who once hunted and persecuted Christians. And it's always funny. A lot of people suggest I should change my name to Saul because I'm the reverse story of Paul. Saulogia, it has a good ring to it. Paul, who once hunted and persecuted Christians, indicated that he saw the risen Christ in 1 Corinthians 15. And I'm going to stop there. Why did you phrase it? No, I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 15:8 says, last of all, he appeared to me also, where me is Paul. So the word there is appeared, and I checked translations. It's almost universally translated as appeared in verse 8. So how does that confidently let you say that he appeared bodily? I assume you've seen The Empire Strikes Back, right? I know you're barely old enough. But
no, I'm not a Star Wars fan. I'm sorry.
You've never seen Empire Strikes Back? Oh, man.
I don't watch Star Wars. I've never seen any of the Star Wars. I'm sorry. I did see it in the 70s.
The example I was going to give was Ben appearing to Luke, so as a ghost. So, but anytime, you know, a ghost appears to someone, that's actually the language that's used, right? Someone appeared to someone. Someone appeared to that. I guess the word appeared doesn't necessarily imply, doesn't have to imply physical body. And so I actually want to read you a few other verses that expand on this passage. I guess it's you'll come to it that my assertion is that this was a vision. And so we'll go to Acts 9, verse 3. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus whom you're persecuting." Let me skip ahead a couple of verses. The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So again, we're talking about a scenario where a bright light shone at him, and when he finally got his vision back, no one there saw anything. So this doesn't sound like a physical body. Let me go to Galatians 1:12. "I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it. Rather, I received it by revelation from Jesus Christ." So if he saw Jesus as a man, why is this a revelation? This is, if he was seeing a Jesus he could talk to, if he was a physical body of Jesus, why did Paul describe it as a revelation? And the one you probably knew I was going to go to, 2 Corinthians 12, verses 1 to 5. "I will go on boasting, although there is nothing to be gained. I will go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, and everyone agrees this is Paul talking about himself in third person. "I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know, but God knows. And I know this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I don't know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things." So Paul doesn't know whether he saw Jesus's physical body or not. He talks about it in three separate passages as visions. So I guess I'm wondering if you can point me to any, because 1 Corinthians 15 is ambiguous, can you point me to any passages that speak of Jesus, Paul seeing a physical Jesus? Is there any passages that you know?
I think that Paul's statement, what he made in 1 Corinthians 15, and when he talked about the resurrection right there, I think that he basically said Jesus appeared to him. He didn't say a spirit of Jesus or a vision of Jesus. He basically just, he put himself on the exact same level as the other 12 disciples and the 500 people who saw Jesus. And we know that the other people who saw Jesus, as I mentioned earlier, they ate with Jesus. They spent 40 days with Jesus, not continuously, but at times he appeared over a 40-day period. So he didn't, in 1 Corinthians 15, he never said, "And I'm the one who only saw him via vision," or "I'm the only one who saw him via a spirit." He put himself on the exact same level as them. So I don't think it's, I think he would have said, that I just saw a flash of light and assumed it was Jesus or that kind of thing. Instead, he basically put himself on that level. So I think that itself is enough to indicate to me that he saw Jesus in the same form that the others on whose level he's put himself had.
And of course, you've spoken to several people who would actually agree with you and say that all of them merely saw visions, right? That Paul exactly did put all those other occurrences on his level of vision. And that's why we go to these other, because appeared is very ambiguous. I guess I'm wondering how you can make this a historical fact. How can you make this a historical fact that we're supposed to explain passages? Sure.
So he said in 1 Corinthians 15, going on to verse 15, he says, "More than that, we are then found to be false witnesses about God, for we have testified about God that he raised Christ from the dead. But he did not raise him if, in fact, the dead are not raised. For if the dead are not raised, then Christ has not been raised either. And if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. You are still in your sins. Then those also who have fallen asleep in Christ are lost. If only for his life we have hope in Christ, we are of all people most to be pitied." So he basically made it pretty clear. The resurrection, if that didn't happen, Christianity is no good. I mean, that's the only point in Christianity that actually really makes a big difference to us. But also, let me note something.
Sure.
Now Paul traveled, just so you know, going back to the Gospels, Paul traveled with Luke starting in Acts 16. That's recorded by Luke. He actually started speaking in the first person. So Acts 16 through the end of Acts, Luke and Paul were traveling together. Paul also met the other disciples. He actually met all of the apostles. There's a period in which, in the book of Acts, where he met with them. He knew Peter very well. He knew James, Jesus' brother, very well. He also traveled with other people like Bartholomew and Timothy. And so they were all, you know, they weren't always together. A lot of times they were very far apart and very distant from each other, but they all knew each other. And so the eyewitnesses to Jesus, who were eyewitnesses to his ministry, also spent much time with Paul. So that gives a lot of credence to what Paul wrote with respect to the entire picture, because he was traveling with all of these people.
So a quick side note, I would encourage you, because I don't think Acts is true or written by Luke at all, I would encourage you to go to Galatians 4 if you ever want to make that argument again, because Galatians 4, I do believe, is written by Paul, and this is where Peter and Paul met. So I would encourage you in future debates to use that, because someone like me is going to be more likely to accept it. However, all the things you just said, none of it requires that Paul didn't see a vision of Jesus. Like the fact that he met with Peter and they got, and he and Peter didn't even get along, which is fine. But the fact that they may have all commiserated and checked stories, that has nothing to do with whether Paul saw a physical body. I've given you three specific passages, the only three where he talks about this outside of it, where he talks about visions, where he talks about the fact that he saw nothing. If there was a physical body there on the road, if you're God, like, and then that would actually be a second coming, because you think that this happened after the ascension. So that means that Jesus came a second time to see Paul for like however many minutes it was, and then disappeared before anyone saw him again. Like, again, I don't see how with all this stuff to contest it, how you can possibly say that he saw a physical risen Jesus is a historical fact. I don't see how you have enough evidence. You've given me some maybes. Maybe this happened. Maybe that happened. And people check their stories later. That doesn't reach the level of historical fact. If you want to say that in 1 Corinthians 15, that Paul indicated that why not use the word from the verse that Jesus appeared to Paul? That's the wording from the verse. Why wouldn't you use that?
I think I did use that verse. I read the actual verse.
In your new meme, you say he indicated he saw the risen Christ, which is what I contest. I don't think he saw the risen Christ. I think he saw a vision of Jesus. And the verse only says, okay, well, the verse says.
That's where we differ, because I think if he merely saw a vision, I don't think it would have been as powerful for Paul, and it would have been something that would have convinced him to preach the way he did over decades and witness. He went through stoning, he had snake bites, he went through shipwrecks, he was jailed, he was beaten numerous times. He went through all kinds of things before he was finally beheaded by Nero,
people change their lives for visions all the time.
Hold on, everybody. Let each other finish their statements.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I actually have one more point because I want to bring up the Mike Winger thing.
I still don't see how this rises to historical fact. If it's so ambiguous, even within the one context you've given it, I don't understand. And you changed the wording of the verse. I don't know why you changed the wording of the verse. Why wouldn't you just use the wording that's in the verse that Jesus appeared to Paul? You're overextending. You're going beyond what the evidence can support, and you're certainly not in the realm of facts.
You know what? I will concede. If this will make you happy, I will change the wording to appeared, and I will change the meme. The next time you see the meme, it will say he appeared to Paul. Is that fair enough?
Awesome. I would love that.
Because I wanted to ask you a question, if it's okay.
Sure.
When I listened to your video with Mike Winger.
Oh, yeah, we're fine. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, sure. When I listened to your video with Mike Winger, you actually also conceded two other people who had also indicated that they saw the risen Christ. And one of them you gave three. You gave Peter, you gave James, the brother of Jesus, the half-brother of Jesus, and you gave Jude. Are you still okay with that? Because you actually conceded those additional three people had seen the risen Christ.
No, I said that those three people existed. I don't think that I conceded that they saw a risen Christ. Anyone saw a risen Christ. In fact,
or that they said, did you concede that they said they saw the risen Christ? Maybe I should put it that way.
No, I would concede that there are books written in their name. Like, I don't think that they wrote that they are attributed to them. I think those are forgeries outright. So, no. I do think that Paul met those people, though. And so if that's what we're talking about.
Okay. So
I will concede that Paul met
those people. Okay.
Absolutely. Paul. Yeah, I would agree with that. Cause again, I consider Galatians 4 to be much stronger. I feel that is probably written by Paul. And in the future, I'm being very sincere about that when I give you that recommendation, cause it says basically the same thing as the Acts, but it doesn't have the stain of what's going on there. Okay, so we move on. Along with the 500, including the 12 apostles. Now, I'm not reading from Great Corinthians there. I'm reading from your meme. Tell me a little bit. So that's a creed. Can you tell the audience a little bit about why that's a creed, what you think is special about the creed? I assume you think it's pretty early.
Yeah, and thank you for asking. I love this particular creed. So this creed was one of the first that was memorized in the church, and everyone, even including people like Bart Ehrman, have actually supported the idea that this creed is very early. A lot of people think that it's within the first 5 years after Jesus' resurrection. Now, from the different areas that I have looked, it appears that Jesus resurrected on April 3rd of 33. So my guess is that this creed was written sometime before 38 or so. And around that same period of time, within that period of time, the estimates that I've seen indicate that Paul also started having his experiences, had his experiences with Jesus and had started his ministry at that point during this time. So he heard this creed, it was passed down to him, and that's what he repeated in 1 Corinthians 15. So it's something that's probably one of the best testimonies to Christianity and its early roots.
So do you think that Paul, given that he was repeating a creed, was actually in a position to affirm that the 500 people saw it or that the 12 apostles saw it? Or was this merely what he heard that other people believed?
Well, actually, that's really a great question, because right within the creed, it indicates that some of the people who had seen Jesus in the 500 had fallen asleep. And so what that also tells us, that also means that some were still alive. And so while he's repeating the creed, he could have been called out by the people who were in these crowds. And you know, again, it was kind of from a small area, small towns. And he could have been called out and said, hey, you're lying. You know, this never happened. Because he could say, well, you know, Johnny over here saw it and Susie over there saw it and that kind of thing. So he actually had something where there were witnesses at the time who could have called him out for lying. And from all indications, I don't see that anyone has.
How would that have worked? So I don't know if you don't follow me on Twitter, I don't think. But a few times I've posted on Twitter.
No, but you know what? You and I can DM each other for some weird reason.
Oh, mine are open. I have no idea how that works. Anyone can DM me. Anyone can DM me.
Okay, because I was like, how can I DM Paul? I'm DMing him. We're not following each other. We should start. I'm going to follow you, Paul. Sorry, I'm going to follow you.
All right. So I've run examples on there where I've said, you know what? In outside of Calgary last night in one of the little towns around here, David Bowie performed a concert. 500 of us saw it. It was amazing. If you doubt this, someone who wasn't there should come and tell you. How would that have worked? How would it possibly have worked that everyone's sitting around saying, boy, I wasn't one of the 500. I should stand up and say something. How is that a reasonable thing? Like, you don't, I wasn't there, so I'm going to put up my hand and contest this. Is that a reasonable thing to do? To expect to have happened?
To say I wasn't there? No. But I would think that if he were telling a lie, in a creed that wasn't something that was passed down, and he was saying that Jesus appeared to these people, if you have the people basically also have families and extended groups, and they're probably spreading the news. So there's probably, you know, you can imagine back in those times, it's not like these days when it's modern.
But let's say it was made up. Let's say it was made up or didn't happen. who could possibly stand up and say, I didn't see it? Because obviously most of the world didn't see it. So I guess I just don't see how this, go ask one of the 500. We don't know who they were. No one knows who they were. It's never attested. I don't know how anyone's supposed to be asked, nor how someone who wasn't there is supposed to stand up and say, I wasn't there, and not to mean anything.
Well, actually, that's another good point, because you have to remember that the apostles themselves were going around and influencing people. So you've got Peter leading different groups. You've got James, Jesus's brother, who was basically running the church in Jerusalem. So there were figureheads all around in these different churches who were planted. So if you, maybe he didn't name the 500, but there were certainly some named people within the apostles. And then, of course,
let's
there were
save
some
that
apostles
for number five.
Who were never named.
Cool. All right. What's that? I guess. Hold on, you see that for number five?
Want to go to number five?
Yeah, I don't think she was finished with.
Oh, I'm sorry. All I wanted to say was I definitely want to talk about what you're talking about in number five. So I want number four. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, no, we can go to number five.
Well, no, I'm okay. I guess all I want to say this one is that Paul was not one of the 500, nor is he one of the 12. So he certainly couldn't have attested to this. All he can attest was that other people believed it. Would you agree with that?
Well, he attested to the creed. Like, he basically presented the creed that they were all saying in the church. And then he said at the very end of it, and by the way, he also appeared to me as one abnormally born.
Right. So. But your point four is worded such a way that Paul is attesting to these other things, which he couldn't have known. I guess I'm going back to the wording of your meme. He's just reciting.
Well,
he's reciting. A nursery rhyme.
Listen, you did grant me. Nursery
rhyme. Go ahead.
You did grant me that he also knew Peter, and he knew James, and he knew Jude. So you did grant me that, and so you granted me
sure,
that he knew people who could testify to this.
Yeah, but that's not what he's doing here. He's repeating a rhyme. We don't know if this was written before or after he met with Peter, for example. We don't know that. I won't stick on it too much because I want to get to the other points, but this is not something Paul could have attested to. As your point says that Paul attested to this, and he couldn't have. He certainly knew that other people believed it, but he didn't know himself. But let's go to number five. Early Christians, including Paul, Peter, Stephen, and James, were often beaten, jailed, stoned, hung on crosses, and beheaded. And I want to stop there. And I want to say something quickly first. Obviously, all religious persecution I'm against is terrible. It doesn't matter whether it's one person or many people. Religious persecution of all kinds is, I think we can all agree, even if there was only one case of it, is awful, should never happen, all that kind of stuff. So I'm not wanting to in any way diminish the sacrifices that people made for what they believed or whatever the case was. But we're talking today about facts. So I wanted to set that emotional stuff aside for a minute. There's some very emotional words, beaten, jailed, stoned. And I just want to talk about, because we're talking about the facts here today. So I wanted to focus a little bit on the word often. In most historical studies, this is a little emotional, but we're talking about the facts of this. So when you say often, you mentioned a few people. You mentioned Pliny the Younger. You mentioned Polycarp, who certainly didn't have a good go of it, and a few others. Most historians will accept all of those because they are very exceptional things. I want to read a little bit of an excerpt from Triumph of Christianity, which is a recent book on the history of the Christianity. At the outset, I need to stress that organized opposition to the Christians came, for the most part, in isolated incidents. The church did not experience perennial violent persecution. The idea that Christianity was an illegal religion under constant surveillance by state apparatus that inflicted martyrdom on many thousands of believers, forcing the church underground onto Roman catacombs, is all more the stuff of Hollywood than of history. Christianity was not declared illegal in the empire before the middle of the third century. There were no empire-wide laws or decrees issued in the central authorities in Rome that prescribed the faith. Christians did not, as a rule, go into hiding. For the most part, they live perfectly normal lives in the midst of other people who practice a wide variety of other religions, blah, 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 etc. Most historians agree that this was not an often fact. And again, it depends entirely on what you mean by often. So that's a weird word to include in something you want to say about as fact. But not only that, every time we have recorded history of where they were persecuted prior to 300, the charge was never that they were Christian. No one was ever arrested for being Christian. Everyone you listed, including Paul, Peter, Stephen, and James, were arrested for being troublemakers, were arrested for causing problems, for breaking other laws, for stirring up crowds. There was nothing in the religion itself that was a problem. Christians who kept their head down, Christian who formed the communities you're talking about that looked after the widows, the ones that are described in Acts, none of those people were ever persecuted. None of those people, I shouldn't say were ever. It was very rare that they were persecuted. And when they were, it wasn't because they were Christians. They were rare because they were persecuted, again, by the ones you listed, by Josephus, by Pliny the Younger, and Polycarp. You mentioned Tacitus, pardon me. Tacitus, Polycarp, and Pliny the Younger. All of those cases were for stirring up trouble. They weren't for the religion. And so I guess, how am I supposed to accept the word often in this sentence? And what do you mean by often?
And, you know, you bring up a good point, because I was just trying to find if I had printed out a blog that I wrote a while ago about Christian persecution in the first 300 years, because, yes, I agree with you. It was sporadic in the first 300 years, okay, until they were granted legal protections by Constantine in 313. It was absolutely sporadic. There were times when it was horrific to be a Christian, and there were other times when it was kind of smooth sailing. Under Decian, which is right before Constantine, it was horrific to be a Christian. He persecuted them in horrible ways. Under Nero, it was pretty bad. Like Tacitus, as you noted, did point out that the Christians were scapegoats. They were the ones who took the blame for the fire in Rome. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that Tacitus had pointed out that Nero used to enjoy burning them, putting them up on in crucifixion, you know, doing all kinds of things in front of people in the Colosseum. He totally abused Christians at that point, and that was documented by Tacitus. So it was sporadic. But my point was, and I was basically really trying to focus on Peter, Paul, James, and Stephen, and others like them, was in those first few decades after Jesus' crucifixion, it was pretty bad to be a Christian. Paul was being chased. In fact, I just wrote a blog on the thorn in Paul's side.
But was it bad to be a Christian, or was it bad to be a Christian, or was it bad to be one of these four guys?
Well, it was bad to be a Christian. You're right. And actually the combination was probably lethal. So the fact that they're a Christian and they're also stirring things up, you know, you've got the Jews against him, you've got the pagans against him, you've got the Romans against him, you've got people who just don't want to see these people move about. And that brings me to something that I think is a lot of people who claim that Jesus is not a historical figure might not realize that something that was unearthed not too long ago in the late 1800s, the Nazarene decree. Claudius, the emperor of Rome from 41 to 55, issued a decree in which he stated that anyone found digging up a body would face capital punishment. And why would he do something like that? So he did that because what happened with Jesus was they basically, you know, it's the claim of, obviously, if they think that if you're a person who does not believe in Christianity, they think that the apostles hid the body and they think that the world came to a calamity after that. And the Christians were going around causing all kinds of problems. So yeah, to be a Christian and to be a Christian,
don't want to get too sidetracked,
is a big problem.
The Nazarene Decree. I don't want to get too sidetracked on that. If anyone's interested, I did a video on the Nazarene Creed. It took place, like, as you say, like 50 years later in an entirely different area, even though it was the Nazarene,
not 50 years.
Obviously it was Jerusalem. But anyway,
Claudius,
all I want to say is
time between 41 and 55.
If the Bible is true, then the Romans knew that no one stole the body. They paid people off to cover up that no one stole the body. So why in the world would a law about grave digging come out of them in response to Christianity when the Romans are the people that knew, according to what you just told me before, old word spread, and they all talk. there's no reason for them to pass this grave digging law when they knew that no one stole, robbed the grave. Like, that just is ridiculous to me. But it's not what we're talking about today. So you would agree then, it sounds like you're saying that you agree with me that the word often maybe isn't an appropriate word if you're talking about historical facts. I think you could talk about severity. You could talk about other things.
You know what I didn't do, Paul? And actually what I think you're speaking to is the fact that I think you're speaking to the first 300 years. In this statement that I made, I didn't actually point out the time period. So I was thinking about the first maybe 50 years while the apostles and everybody else was still alive. I wasn't thinking about the first 300 years where we do have sporadic treatment of the Christians through those centuries under different emperors. So. So I guess if I want to clarify, I could add a time period to this to make this more clear.
I'm not convinced that it was even often even in that first 50 years, but what you suggest would be an improvement. I still think the word often there is problematic and potentially misleading of what really happened. You go on to say in 5, they preached for decades. And I guess my first question there is, who is they in that sentence?
Well, we have, except for Stephen, we know that Paul, Peter, and James were among three. And those are, you know, Stephen was the first martyr. So we know it wasn't Stephen. He was basically stoned right away. But the rest of them preached for decades. They preached till, in fact, estimate that Paul was beheaded around 62 or 64, depends on which place you look.
So if I want to go back, though, again, we're following the English on this, because you're using a pronoun, the last subject was just early Christians. So, of course, early Christians preached for decades. You're trying to say that Peter, Paul, and not Stephen, James, preached for decades? Is that what you want to say?
Well, actually, the first sentence is, it's not early Christians, including Paul, Peter, Stephen, and James, were often beaten, stoned, hung on crosses, or beheaded, period. Then I put, they preached for decades. Now, because Stephen was stoned right away, he was not preaching for decades. So the rest of them, I would say, they,
The parenthetical statement there, you know, wouldn't count as the subject of the sentence. The subject of the sentence is early Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to get this pedantic. Yeah, I honestly didn't know who you meant. So, because if you're going to say it was the 12 for some reason, I guess my question was going to be, how do you know? But I'm going to finish that sentence and then we'll wrap it up in how do you know? So you said they preached for decades, stating that they saw the risen Christ. So I guess I'm wondering if you can point me to some source where someone says their name and claims to have seen Jesus alive. That would be really cool. Since you're telling me it's a historical fact that these people were out preaching that, I would love to know what your source is for that.
Well, I mean, we have the documentation in the Gospels and Acts and in the epistles and the different Bible testimonies, but we also have documentation of the martyrdoms. For example, Josephus, Hegesippus, and Clement of Alexandria documented the martyrdom of Jesus. Half brother James.
No, but you said
Peter was crucified upside down, and Eusebius.
You said that these people were out saying they saw the risen Christ. Where is the documentation that someone that we know who they were saw the risen Christ?
Well, the documentation is in the Bible. So I just said that. So the Bible was written, and the early church fathers also supported the Bible. So we have a number of church fathers who supported that, who were passed down from the Bible. So early Christians basically said that.
So you think that's strong enough to be a historical fact if the Bible said it?
Well, we also have people like Pliny the Younger, I should say. So he talked about what Christians were believing and how Christians were treated and what they thought.
Right, but you're claiming a very, and I'm sorry, I'm gonna talk over this, and Kyle can shoot me if he wants, but this is the one point that really drives me crazy. And you added this later. You said that they were claiming they saw the risen Christ, and that's the whole point of what you're resting this on. Now you're diverting to other people who didn't have their later centuries, they didn't have a chance to see the risen Christ. Where is your documentation? we don't think that necessarily the epistles were written by anyone who were witnessing. Again, we talked about Paul. You think that Paul did, but the other people, I don't think they did. Where is there documentation of someone writing down, someone saying that people who saw Christ were out there preaching? That's a very high bar of evidence.
I think if you take the entire story here, so we've got the Gospels, we have the book of Acts, we have the epistles, and we have the other documents from the New Testament that basically point to people saying that they saw the risen Christ. And then we have external people such as Pliny the Younger talking about how they treated the Christians who would not, you know, they interrogated them. In fact, in this one point, he says, I interrogated these as to whether they were Christians. Those who confessed, I interrogated a second and third time, threatening them with punishment. Those who persisted, I ordered executed, for I had no doubt that whatever the nature of their creed, stubbornness, and inflexible obstinacy surely deserved to be punished. There were others possessed of the same folly. Because they were Roman citizens, I signed an order for them to be transferred to Rome. So we have the evidence
you've diverted
of the treatment
again
of Christians.
The treatment of Christians is not people who saw the risen Christ. Saw the risen Christ, you're putting here as a proof text to say that Christ rose. So none of those people that Pliny tortured to even claim that they saw Jesus Christ. So I want to know, this factual statement that you inserted into your thing, you know, where is the fact, where is the historical fact for that?
Well, it's based on the end of the four Gospels, and it's based on the, and it's also based on Acts, and it's based on the epistles, and it's based on 1 Corinthians 3:15.
This is the same level as number three, right? This is the same level as saying, because the gospel said that they did. Not because, you know, there's historical evidence to, because we don't even have historical confirmation that, you know, these people went out preaching, as far as I can tell.
Well, we do in the nine sources, but you know what? Actually, I think, Paul, I think one thing that would be kind of good to add at this point, can I have a second to add something to all of this?
Please.
Sure.
Like this entire, to kind of rope it all together for a second. So sure. Here's what we have. And we've been talking a lot about the New Testament, and we've been talking about whether or not the New Testament is valid, and your views on the New Testament and the Gospels and Acts, and your views on Galatians and 1 Corinthians 15. But what's pretty neat that we also have is we have all kinds of prophecies that were fulfilled in the New Testament from the Old Testament, and some of them were pretty specific. For example, in Daniel 9, it's very specific when we look at the 77s, less 7, which equals 483 years after the decree of Ataturxes, that pointed to, given 360-day Jewish calendar, pointed to the day of Jesus' resurrection, which works out to April 3rd of 33, if you start from 444 BC, when the king actually had issued his decree. So we've got that date figured out from the Old Testament. Isaiah 53, we've got Psalm 22, and we have Zechariah 12:10 that actually also pointed to Jesus being pierced hands and feet, and the crucifixion. So we've got, and even the resurrection was something basically prophesied in the book of Isaiah. So we've got some pretty neat things that pointed to what occurred in the New Testament from the Old Testament. And the neat thing about the Old Testament is we've got proof of that from the Dead Sea Scrolls that were from before Jesus even showed up on the earth. So if you, whether or not you support the New Testament, I think we have enough evidence in the Old Testament to support Jesus.
Here's the thing, you keep talking about this now, your prophecy, and I don't want to get too far off because I want to get to the points. But in order for me to care even slightly about the prophecies in the Old Testament, you would need to demonstrate that the fulfillment actually happened. You were talking about the New Testament because that's the supposed evidence that the things that were prophesied actually happened. I'm not impressed that a later author who were clearly motivated to connect the dots managed to put together some things that really look like they connected the dots. In my old job, it was part of my job in film with sequels to connect the dots, to make sure that the old stuff and the new stuff all, you know, looked like it was all one coherent narrative. That was a job of mine. So I know you're really impressed with Isaiah and Daniel. But for someone like me to be impressed, and this is just, again, advice that you don't want. If you want to convince a non-believer that this prophecy meant anything, you have to first show us that it was actually fulfilled.
Can I interject real quick?
Cool. Oh yeah, sure.
Just to let you guys know, it's 9:30 now, and I know the after show is scheduled for 10, so you got about 20 minutes left just to give you guys kind of a where you're at as far as time is concerned, okay, and the points that you want to continue to get to. Okay.
Well, the good thing that I don't care about number 7. So can we jump to number 6, SJ?
Well, SJ, you had something that
number
you wanted to add on to that.
I did. Right? I just wanted to piggyback. Yeah, to say to your point that that they could written down. Now I could understand that. I could understand somebody saying, "Oh, well, let's go ahead and write down exactly a crucifixion, write record a resurrection, because then it would be consistent with Isaiah." But the fact is, Daniel was around 500 years, over 500 years before Jesus even walked the earth, and he was able to predict the exact timing of Jesus' crucifixion in his Daniel 9. And even Malachi 3 predicted that before the second temple is destroyed, the Messiah will have come. And so that was something that occurred in 70. So we know the Messiah cannot have come after 70. So we've got a lot of stuff in the Old Testament pointing to the Messiah, his timing, his crucifixion, his resurrection. We've got enough with the Old Testament to show that Jesus is divine. But yeah,
find a Jewish rabbi who's convinced by that, and then come bring him to me, and then we'll chat. Number 6. Christianity was not legalized until 313 when Constantine legalized it. That's interesting. It was not legalized till 313. So I think that's a historical fact. Can you tell everyone when Christianity was made illegal?
I think I've stated this before, and I purposely didn't say that it was illegal. They didn't have legal protections prior to 313. So Christians had no legal protections.
Can you give me an example of any religion in the history of the Roman Empire that had legal protections?
I don't know. I know that the Christians had legal protections. I'm not sure if the pagans had legal protections prior to that. But I know from what you tweeted out that you found that the pagans were accusing the Christians of being atheists. So you must have found something out.
Yeah, I mainly wanted to bug Steve because, you know, the word atheist was used in a different context that in the end. So I just like to bug Steve. SJ.
But I agree with you on that.
You are writing this to imply that for 313 years that Christianity was illegal. That's what you're implying with this. It was illegal for exactly 10 years. It was made illegal in 303, so they had a really bad decade. And then it was actually legalized, which had never happened before in the Roman Empire. No religion was ever made specifically legal. Every religion, every cult, they all were on even grounds. You're trying to make it sound like Christianity had this special thing that was happening to them. When in Roman history, no, all religions were treated equal. Christianity had exactly the same treatment as every other possible religion. When you're trying to take this number 6 and, well, look, it sounds like what SJ is saying is that it was illegal for 313 years when you know that it wasn't.
Well, that's why I didn't say it. I said Christians had no legal protections.
Why you said
I didn't
it that way.
Say.
No, that's not what
yeah,
you say.
So we agree. I phrased it okay,
not,
right?
No, Christianity was made illegal in 303 and legalized in 313 because it was only illegal for 10 years. You are people who don't understand the history. You're making them think that for 313 years it was illegal when clearly it was not.
Okay, you know what, Paul? On the blog that I haven't released yet, this is the blog that I've written. It's about you. But
all right.
This is my response in my preparation for the blog. I changed it, and I'm sorry because I forgot that I didn't. That meme doesn't reflect that. So I changed it to Christians had no legal protections until 313 when Constantine legalized Christianity. So I'm sorry. I didn't realize I hadn't changed it in the meme. So.
But
so,
also,
yes, I agree with you. This needs to be phrased.
I would encourage you to. I don't understand how that's supposed to be an argument for Christianity when literally every religion in the Roman Empire was under exactly the same situation. I don't see how that's a special Christianity case.
Well, I wouldn't say that because I think that the Jews had a lot of rights and a lot of protections back then. And in fact, you can even tell with the fact that Pontius Pilate basically took what the Jews wanted and permitted the, what was this called, Barabbas, basically released Barabbas, who was a known troublemaker, to the Jews,
right,
because the Jews wanted Jesus crucified. So the Jews were given certain status that definitely the Christians were not given.
No. But we're talking about all the religions. All the religions had all those rights. They were all allowed to build the temples they wanted to do, including Christians. It was only made illegal 300 years later. There were Christian temples, there were Christian churches. You certainly know that they were allowed to build their own temples and allowed to build their own churches. The fact that they didn't have legal protection means nothing because no religion had legal protection. That's all I'm trying.
Well, I think that there were.
Like, if
okay,
you're trying to
okay,
say
now in the first. I think that they were a lot of more in hiding and didn't have much protections, especially in the first years and towards the last years. I'll put it that way. So we have the examples of Decian and we've got the examples of Nero, who are probably the two worst emperors towards the Christians.
Sure, but that doesn't make Christians special. There were other sects that got blamed for other certain things. But I guess if you're trying to use this as one of your points that you're saying all these only point one way, this is the most vague, weird claim you could include. That's all I'll say. Let's skip to number seven. I'm going to actually grant you.
And Paul, wait, in your investigations, Paul, were you able to find evidence that there were pagans who were being persecuted for being pagans at that point, or that there were Jewish people who were being persecuted during the first couple hundred years who were Jewish because they were Jewish?
Pagans were persecuted when locals, and never officially, but when other people felt that your neighbor wasn't worshiping the right God and it wasn't raining, and you thought that your neighbor wasn't doing the right thing. Yeah, there was lynchings. There was, you know, people would go after people because they thought they weren't doing the right religious stuff so that everyone in the town could get what they needed. But again, no one was given legal protection and no one was officially persecuted. And so if you're trying to say that Christianity was special, which is clearly what you're trying to say, Christianity was not special. It had exactly the same status as everyone else. I'm granting you number seven. I'm just going to read it again for the audience just so that they can accept that Paul granted something to you. Christianity started as a religion of peace, growing through the peaceful efforts of apostles and disciples. Absolutely, I would grant you this. No one went to war in those first centuries to get converts. So I think that's what you're trying to say, is that it's unlike some other religions that may have asserted by force. And again, you make the exception here. I think you'd agree, and we'll talk about it in 313, that Constantine made it the official religion, and certainly there were societal benefits to becoming a Christian, and there was a huge wave of converts to get the social benefit of being the same religion as the emperor. But you okay with that, SJ? I grant you number seven outright.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the social benefits, because actually that's what increased by 350 AD. The numbers went up to about 50 million Christians after Constantine granted legal status.
All right, Kyle, so we're on the last one. Number eight.
You do.
By 313, Christianity had between 5 and 6 million adherents. See Dr. Jeffrey Wowrow, 2008 Historical Atlas. This is super pedantic, and I'm glad it's the last one, and it's going to make me seem like just a jerk, but that's fine.
This is Dr. Jeffrey Wowrow, Historical Atlas.
Right. Personally, I don't think it has any, like the fact that there's 5 to 6 million, whatever. But did you also, I guess I'm wondering if you also studied some people who have, there's some other historians who have tried to determine the number. So I don't know if you, followed German historian Adolf von Harnack. Is that name ring a bell to you?
No, I didn't follow him. What did he say?
So he puts the study that 4 million is the highest cap, potentially, as if during his study. And Yale historian Ramsey McMullen, my printer didn't do a very good job of reading this, suggests that the maximum would have been 2 to 3 million Christians at 313 AD. So again, I'm wondering if perhaps you went to one source. I was able to quickly find other sources that didn't agree with this number. I guess I'm again wondering if you went, if there's something special about this atlas.
Yeah, or there is. I'll tell you
that we would consider this historical fact over these other historians who are doing work in the last decade, who come up with different numbers. I guess what makes this a fact some other number?
Here's why I picked Dr. Jeffrey Wawro, and here's even why I bought this book. I bought it at Costco a bunch of years ago, and I love this book. I'm still getting through it. I haven't even finished the book. But basically, there are 40 contributors in here, and they're all from universities. A lot of have terminal degrees, and they're from all around the world. Places like University of Cambridge, Toronto, University of California, Sydney, Western Australia, University of California, Los Angeles, University of Boston University, Vanderbilt, Macquarie, so Yale. So there are all of these scholars. There are over 40 scholars in here, along with Jeffrey Wawro, who basically supported this book. And the portion that's written down in here that makes it quite clear that it's between 5 and 6 million is, again, in a book that's authored by somebody who also has contributors who, you know, 40 different contributors. It seemed like a pretty decent source, and not just one single person claiming it's, you know, 2 to 3 or 4 to 5. I'll concede that it's over 2 million, and we could probably both come to an agreement that the scholars that you found and the ones that I found are saying it's over 2 million, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and in fact, if you just phrase this as millions, or I like your number, I like your range, over 2 million is fine. I'm pleased. I'm pleased about your level, your answer there. I was worried that you just picked the first one and went with it. Okay. So we've got some edits. You're going to make some edits to the meme. I'm going to watch later, and I can help you do the edit if you want. But next time you post this, it's going to be different, right?
Yeah, I've made some notes, and actually, I'm going to release this blog tomorrow, and this has all of my notes from responding to you, and so you'll see, and even some secret notes that I didn't even get out today. So okay. So you'll see all this stuff. So you'll see all the details, and I'll modify each statement in here according to what we've come to agreement on.
All right. So we can expect maybe the hit piece on Paul tomorrow, right?
Say it again.
We can expect the hit piece on Paul tomorrow, right?
Yes. Yes. I'm releasing this tomorrow because I don't have time tonight because I'm going to be on.
Well, first of all, she's not Dean Esme. Okay. So.
No, I don't want to hear that name in the new year. Come on.
She definitely is not.
No, I'm
now,
not.
This was this is actually really. Not at all. But I was really kind of entertained by the fact that this was a discourse where one person was making suggestions and one person was actively listening. We're not used to that. That was weird, but enjoyable.
It's amazing. A theist.
Why is my dumpster cold?
Folks, take notes. Yeah, this is what happens when two rational people get together and have a conversation. This
is boy, SJ, 2019, it's called you rational. You're making progress here.
Dang.
You never thunk that. Right. I'm like, wow. That's
yeah. Thank you both for go ahead, SJ.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was gonna say I've got a busy week this week, and I'm trying to keep my rationality up in conversations with both atheists and theists, so it's gonna be pretty fun.
Good.
I'm talking tomorrow night to David Smalley.
Oh, yeah, we know David.
What are you talking on?
I actually don't even know. Someone said, should I get on his channel? And he said he'd like to have me on his channel. So I filled out a form, and I guess I'm going to be on there tomorrow at 8. So I have no idea.
Good deal.
So
everybody should check that out. You should guys definitely check that out. Do you guys want to, have you said all that you need to, or do you want to have a couple of minutes to wrap up for, like, any last thoughts, any final statements, or how do you feel right now?
I'll let Paul.
I think I've said all I need. Thank you, SJ, so much for humoring me and allowing me to vent about your meme in this public fashion, as opposed to on Twitter, which I think you and I know is not the best way to have a nuanced discussion about anything. I appreciate the fact that you're going to make some changes so that I don't have to scream at my screen next time I see the blog, and maybe in the after show you and I can talk about what conclusions these would come to once we've revised the list.
Oh, I love that idea. So you're leaving us hanging for something fun to do next. I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Great, great. Yeah, because I think now I want to say thank you to Steve and to Kyle and to you, Paul, because I really always enjoy talking to you guys. You guys have always been mega polite, and I really enjoy coming on your show. And I appreciate the fact that I was able to articulate some of my points here and to explain why I think the best explanation of all of these points is Jesus is risen. So that's my viewpoint. But we'll explain good that in more detail on Shannon's channel.
Yes, and I was getting ready to say, you can follow from here over to Shannon's channel. Shannon, if you're still in the live chat, would you please put the link again in the, so everybody can click onto that and get ready for the after show. I want to thank both of you for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have both.